This is bookcareers.com live, the podcast about careers in book publishing for people who are looking for a job, building a career, or who want to do their current job better. I'm your host, Suzanne Collier, the founder of bookcareers.com, and it's my job to solve career problems relating to the book world. Hello and welcome to episode 178 of bookcareers.com live. Our podcast is on a summer break and we're replaying some of our favourite and important interviews, all of which are worth a second listen. Today is a replay of part two of our interview with David Shelley, the CEO of Hachette Book Group UK. Please note, this is a replay of an earlier episode and any dates or information may have subsequently changed. Do check our website, bookcareers.com, for the latest news. Today we are continuing our chat with David Shelley, the CEO of Hachette. If you missed the previous episode, do go back and listen. In it, David was talking about his own amazing career path, the things he learned along the way, his vision for the Hachette regional offices, and why diversity and inclusion is so important for the industry. Let's not delay you anymore and rejoin the discussion. Now, I know you're a great believer of book job transparency, and one of the things I admire about the changes you've made is it's a major achievement for a company such as Hachette to advertise every role with a salary band. What would you say to publishers that are still holding back on this?
I mean, I understand it because before we did it, and actually, I should credit Melanie Tanzi, our brilliant HR director, and her team, who've been so amazing about doing this. Before we did it, there was a lot of anxiety in the business about, well, if we do this, what's it going to mean? Is it going to, that there can be a nervousness before transparency where you think, where people think, and I thought a bit myself, like, are people going to, is it going to make people angry or upset, sort of seeing the numbers, you know, down there? Is it going to lead to people I don't know? And also there was anxiety about, is it going to mean our competitors sort of steal a march on us, or sort of are able to kind of see what we're offering and then offer more? Actually, our experience has been only positive about it. So we did two, there were two things that happened. One is, and these were actions, I should say, these were actions that came out of workshops from the gender pay gap. And so these are ideas our staff had, and this is, I would say, again, sort of an, you know, to my point earlier about failure and learning from failure, you know, it was me and the senior team hearing what staff had to say about lack of transparency and what it meant for that, particularly women were saying what it meant for their careers, and how more transparency would help. So these are ideas coming up for the business. And with two things, one is salary transparency on ads, and also salary transparency internally. So there are salary ranges for every role here, and people can see what the salary band is. And there's guidance on, well, if you start in a role, you might start at this end of the salary band and you can work your way up to this end of the salary band. Lots of nervousness here about it. So, but it's been all positive. What it has meant is that sometimes, I would say, particularly the internal salary band, someone will say to their manager, well, why am I not in that band? Or why am I at the lower end of the band? Actually, that has usually almost always led to very productive, constructive conversations. In some cases, the manager then being able to have more justification sometimes for promoting that person or giving them a high salary. And sometimes being able to say, look, if you want to get higher in the salary band, you need to achieve X, Y, and Z. It's also meant, because part of the thing with the gender pay gap was, you know, just having absolute transparency so people could see that men and women were being paid, you know, at the same level, that there was no advantage based on your gender. And actually, I think it's been very helpful in that sense as well. I think it makes managers really, really scrupulously fair at all stages. And in terms of the external salaries, I hope it means that people coming into the business can see what they're getting and can make a positive choice about whether they come here, and doesn't make them feel that the last thing I want. I know publishing sometimes has a reputation for making people sort of feel, oh, you're lucky to be working in this industry. And I'm a very commercial person. I don't believe anyone should feel lucky. I think, you know, everyone deserves to be well remunerated for what they do and to have a clear career path and to see what's possible for them. So I'm really, you know, and I know you've been a massive advocate for pay transparency. And I just think, you know, the more transparency in the industry, the better for all of us.
Agree with everything you've said, and it's great to hear that it, you know, pay transparency has a huge positive influence on people's careers. At the moment I'm analysing the salary survey results, and I'm a huge advocate, as you've said, because how can people make intuitive career decisions about whether to work for a company or to know which career path to take if they don't know what that career path will pay? So, yeah. You know, just I'm gushing. Just gushing.
Oh, no, thank you.
So let's talk now about working for Hachette. You know, what sort of experience or career development do you vision for a Hachette employee?
So I should caveat this and say this is what I want. This is not, unfortunately, necessarily the experience everyone currently has, but we're working on it. I want Hachette to be a place where everyone feels welcome, where there is, you know, we're much more representative at all levels. We're diverse, we're inclusive, where there's a rich sort of cultural life for people here, where all sorts of, you know, differences and are celebrated. I want that. I also want it to be a really entrepreneurial place where people feel, like to your earlier point, they are in charge of their own career. They can make their own decisions. They can, you know, and I want us to be a place, and this is maybe, is it controversial? I don't think it's controversial, but we're not the civil service. So I want to be clear, we are a sort of money-making capitalist business in the hopefully the nicest sense of the word. And I want it to be a place where people can be entrepreneurial with their own careers, and that someone who's really talented, no matter what their background, no matter what their level of education, whatever, if they're super talented, that they can turbocharge their career here. And if they add a lot to the company through what they bring in, that they can, that, you know, they can really develop, they can earn good money, they can, you know, have great prospects, they can receive brilliant training. And actually, at a base level, I want everyone here. So we've got a sort of a brilliant new learning and development director who joined a couple of years ago, Rosat Burton. And she has made sure there's a learning library that everyone who works at Hachette can access. So there's great training, I think, for everyone. And then if people are really contributing, then we want to work with them very proactively and say, you know, this is how you can, you know, this is how you can achieve even more. So I want it to be a diverse, inclusive place, but also an entrepreneurial place. And I think those two things go really well together, in my view.
Yeah, it's just so positive, everything that you're saying and planning ahead. Are there any plans to expand or change entry-level recruitment? Are there going to be more graduate schemes or entry-level ways into Hachette, do you think?
So we have... we have a recruitment scheme at the moment, an internship scheme, which is a 1 year long graduate trainee scheme. And the aim there is, you know, helping us to be a more diverse place. So there's an element of positive action to that, which we're sort of unashamed about. And I would say what's been brilliant, we're in our fifth year of that is so... the quality, the caliber of applicants for that is incredibly high. And the caliber of people who get on it is incredibly high. And we've got a good record of most of the people who do that year-long traineeship then go on to get a permanent job at Hachette. I actually then see it as a success. I could see it as a failure. I also see it as a success that a lot of those people now have left and go on to other companies in publishing for bigger jobs. And then some of them are now coming back here for a bigger job after that, bigger job somewhere else. I do take, you know, I think that's, again, the rising tide helping all boats. So we're doing that. We're doing more, I guess, in terms of we went through a period of doing blind recruitment, which was aimed at, you know, trying to make us more diverse. We're now taking the view we want to see the whole person, and we think actually that's perhaps a more productive way of achieving diverse recruitment. So we're doing more of that now. One thing we've learned is the more work and effort that we put in as a company in the first few months of someone's employment here, the more that we see from them. So we've got big plans in the next few months to almost have a sort of Hachette University, where when people are joining the business, they have a lot of different modules of learning about different aspects of the business, how it all fits together, our values, our, you know, the way things work, how different bits interact, the history of the company, things like that. And I'll hold my hands up. We've not been brilliant at that in the past. And I think maybe like a lot of the industry, we've allowed people to pick stuff up through osmosis, or usually there's a really kind person in every division who will sort of tell people things ad hoc. But that's not good enough. So we know we need to put more into the first few weeks and months of people's experience here. And that's what we'll be doing.
So really investing in your employees and their future careers. And that's the thing too, is that you say whilst you see it as a failure to people that might leave and then go on to another job elsewhere, it's one of the things that... we always used to say at Andre Deutsch, when I worked at Andre Deutsch, that we were like the training ground. People would come and spend like a year with us, and then they'd be able to go and be employed anywhere. And it happened with an awful lot of authors as too. We published a lot of debut authors, and then they'd get pinched by bigger publishers for much more money. But it is really great that you're really investing in the employees, really, really good. And now to the future of publishing. What do you think the next big thing for the industry is?
It's a really good question. I think we are, as an industry, I think there's sort of how we rebuild post-COVID. I think that's a really big immediate question for the industry, how we manage this sort of hybrid working, and how COVID, I guess, has almost advanced some of the discussion about some of the issues of representation in the industry. I think it really has done. It's sort of almost exacerbated. I mean, I read an interesting article about how pandemics usually sort of throw a spotlight onto inequalities that exist and have done historically. And I think this one has done as well. So I think there's big questions for the industry about that. I think one thing I'm keen on doing is having more open conversation in the industry about all the sorts of issues you've been asking me about today. I think it's valuable. I think there's a lot of fear at senior levels, and I think the more open discussions, sort of hopefully the more constructive progress we can make. So I think there's a real need for senior leaders like me to sort of be part of conversations, listen, for there to be kind of open forums. So I think that's a very immediate thing for the industry. I think the longer term question is about people's time and their reading habits and the amount of, again, I was reading some interesting neuroscience the other day about people's concentration spans and the amount of devices often we're all juggling now. We're sort of on our phones checking for texts, and we've got emails going on our laptop, and we might be watching a video at the same time. It's sort of how that then, there's definitely a lot of anecdotal feedback about our ability to focus and concentrate on long form content such as books. So I think there's real long term questions there. Hachette's also big in educational publishing, and I think there's real questions there about the transition towards digital and how kids learn, like, and how much of that is online. And how much of that is via textbooks. So I think we're at a fascinating point of change and disruption. I don't know what you think.
I think when you talk about the long form reading, I mean, just looking at Twitter, there's so many editors that said that during the last 18 months, they've struggled to read, that just the impact of what's been going on around them. And as regards the fear that you talk at senior level, I actually think that that's generational fear. And as the next generation moves up a ladder, as we've seen with people like yourselves, that change will be implemented just almost organically. And I think that because, you know, the entry level generation is extremely open and extremely perceptive and extremely inclusive. And comparing that to the people who are senior level who might now be coming to retirement, that doesn't mean that they're not inclusive, perceptive, but they've been brought up in a very different generational situation. And so I can see that some of this progression will be organic, but there's not a reason not to force change now.
I think that's a really good analysis of it. I'd agree with all of that.
Thank you. And now, about Hachette, you've continued to make acquisitions of a number of small independent publishers. You mentioned Summersdale, there was Constable and Robinson, Jessica Kingsley, and now Hachette in America has just purchased Workman. Do you predict further acquisitions? I mean, have you left any small publishers left to buy?
I mean, I feel I've got two hats on here. So I've got the former Alison and Busby hat, which I know during my time at Alison and Busby, I think it was during my time at Alison and Busby when HarperCollins bought Fourth Estate. And I was really gutted about that. Whenever a big publisher bought a small publisher, I was really gutted because I always thought like, oh, that's one less of us. And I still feel that to some extent. It is a bit sad when something that's really done very well as an independent gets swallowed up by a large corporate like ourselves. At the same time, I would say a few things. One is the one thing I've learned, you know, when we've acquired these businesses, so say Constable and Robinson or Jessica Kingsley or Piatkus or whatever, it is often Lawrence King most recently. It is often when a founder wants to retire, or a founder, you know, is experiencing ill health. Or it can be sometimes, I mean, taking Summersdale, a founder actually wants to be able to concentrate on the creative and the publishing a bit more and have the support of an organization around them in order to grow. Or yeah, Bookature, and again, you know, ebook publishing business where they are having a print partnership with a large publisher was very important strategically. So there can be really good reasons why these independent publishers come to sell. In my experience, it's never been a sort of hostile type situation where a large publisher sort of dangles a check in front of a smaller publisher. The independents that we've dealt with in our experience, that they have, for whatever reason, had a reason to sell. I would personally much rather they sold to Hachette than to one of our competitors, obviously. I would also say one nice thing has been, you know, if we take Constable or we take Bookature or Lawrence King, or actually particularly if I take Summersdale, who's still based in their office in Chichester, I hope that in the best situations, we've been able to preserve the brilliance of what that company does, kind of keep their autonomy, keep the spirit of that organisation, keep the sort of often maverick nature of it. And then, you know, I hope enhance it in certain ways through our big distribution center, through all masses of salespeople we have, through our IT systems, our HR department, our Changing the Story program, sort of, and often, I mean, to be nuts and bolts about it, often we will be able to offer better employee benefits, you know, our pension scheme, health scheme, you know, things like that, that just large companies can do. So I think there are sort of positive, you know, all sorts of positives there. I would say as well, I think there's a natural cycle that I think you and I have both seen where it can feel awfully sad. You know, even it feels sad to me, even when we're buying a company that's been around for 40 years and you think that company no longer exists. But then out of the corner of my eye, I'll see something else, you know, sort of Joffy or Canelo in the ebook space kind of coming up. Or a lot of, you know, sort of other small micro publishers coming up, and there'll be things being created at the same time. So I think in any generation there are founders and owners who are selling up, and then there are, and I see, and one thing I'm really encouraged by is all the 20 somethings I see actually starting their own literary magazines, starting their own journals, starting their own small micro publishers. That's really exciting because those are the sort of, you know, indies of tomorrow, right? So I think it's always evolving.
Yeah. And it is that generational thing. And it's almost like when, if we turn back to like the early 90s, when a number of small independents were bought up, the primary publishers of those smaller independents went on to form, to start their own independent. You know, I'm thinking of the Christopher Sinclair Stevensons, for instance. You know, they went, the Ian Chapmans, they went to start on their own publishers. So it the industry does particularly evolve. And also what you say about, yeah, the entrepreneurship that's coming through from all those that are wanting to join the industry or in their first couple of jobs within the industry is just outstanding, really. And it's definitely, you mentioned entrepreneurship a few times during this chat, that it is definitely the number one skill, I think, that people are starting to need as the industry becomes more competitive for people's times with other industries.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, those are skills that are so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, finally, are there any words of wisdom you would like to share with our listeners?
I don't know if they're wisdom at all, but what one thing I did want to share with everyone is, in my career journey, some of the things I don't regret and the things that I've taken, you know, the things that I've taken sort of solace in and that I don't regret are the things where I've gone with my own gut instinct and I've acted in good faith. And the things that I do regret and the things where I think I wish I'd done that differently are when I've acted in bad faith, I suppose, or when I've done things for reasons other than because I think it's the right thing or that it's what my gut's telling me. When I've done something because I think it's what someone else wants me to do, if that makes sense, or whatever. So that's a piece of, for what it's worth, life lessons for me. The other thing I did want to say is that I'm sure there's a lot of people listening who are considering a career in book publishing. I'm also conscious, particularly on social media, there can be some voices saying, don't go and work in book publishing. What I would say, my experience is, I would really urge people to and say, I think it's a fantastic career. I do think it's a ceaselessly interesting, engaging, stimulating, often challenging, often, you know, often frustrating industry, but you'll never be bored. And I do also want to say, I truly believe that people do want it to become better, that there are problems in our industry. We do need to change. We do need to evolve. I can't guarantee to anyone that you won't experience problems or difficulties, but I hope I can guarantee to you, you won't be bored and that it's worth sticking in there. So please come and join our wonderful industry, our wonderful problematic industry. Please come and join us.
That is a brilliant note to end on. And I cannot believe that people would tell other people not to work in book publishing. You know, I had a fantastic, but very diverse career path too, but it is so much fun, and I could probably count the days on sort of one hand where I haven't actually enjoyed what I do. I just want to pick you up on something, David, because you said something about regretting the things that you did. In my experience, you should never regret the things you did and only the things you didn't do.
Oh, okay. Oh, good advice. I'll try to do that.
Great. Lovely. Thank you so much for your time today, David. It's been brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, David, for sharing your thoughts and wisdom with us all. I don't know about you, and I'm sorry for the gushing, but I find David's attitude inspiring, and he is definitely a refreshing voice within the publishing industry. To find out more about what Hachette are up to and the latest job opportunities, then visit hachette.co.uk or follow Hachette Careers on Twitter. If you enjoyed this episode, please can you rate us on iTunes? It will help others find us. And don't forget to share our podcast with your friends or on social media. And remember, if you're stuck in your publishing career or wish you had a publishing career or publishing job, then book into the Book Careers Careers Clinic via the bookcareers.com website or email me at suzanne@bookcareers.com. Now it is your opportunity to join in the live discussion. You can find us across social media using the hashtag BookCareers or on Twitter at BookCareers or me personally, Suzanne Collier. Or visit our own platform at bookcareers.com/live. Thank you for listening. May you all be doing a job you love and being paid the salary that you so richly deserve.